Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
On February 9th of 2004, 21-year-old UMass student Maura Murray drove from her dorm in Amherst, Massachusetts to the White Mountains of New Hampshire.
At approximately 7:27 p.m., Maura spun out her 1996 Saturn on a hairpin turn on Route 112 in North Haverhill. There has never been a credible sighting of Maura since.
Maura is 5'7" tall. She weighs 120 pounds, and she has brown hair and hazel eyes.
If you have any information regarding Maura's disappearance, please submit it to us,
the Murray Family, at mauramurrayfamilydirect@gmail.com,
or the New Hampshire State Police Cold Case Unit.
This is Missing Maura Murray.
Welcome back to Missing Maura Murray. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I'm doing so well. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing all right. And Lance, for this episode today, we are going to play the audio from our Get Vocal show from last Thursday night. We had a real fun time trying to break down some stuff. We had some guest appearances. We had Maggie Freeling in the chat room, or actually in the episode with us. We had Brett from the Prosecutors Podcast in the episode with us, joining on the Get Vocal show, and Julie Murray was in the chat room.
Yeah, so this was our first Missing Maura Murray Get Vocal night that we were doing, not in replace of the gossip pods that we've been doing, but it was time that we addressed certain things that were happening in the Maura Murray community as a community. So we knew that Get Vocal was the most interactive place to do this, as well as the fact that it streams on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. So you can access it from multiple platforms, but you can interact right there on Get Vocal. And we figured this would be the perfect place. And Julie Murray did join us, and a couple of a couple of people that we've never met. We hopped on, and this guy was there. He was only there as user, so we didn't know his name just by looking at his profile. But no, he was fired up. He was ready to go. He was asking us questions, and it was fun. And we packed that room, and it became a spontaneous, impromptu fundraiser for the GoFundMe that Julie Murray started, separate from Maggie's GoFundMe. So now there's two GoFundMes for Maura Murray, and Julie's is the active one. And we donated all of the V-coins that came to us during that hour to Julie Murray's GoFundMe. Once we get paid out on that, we will send it directly to that account.
And so obviously this is now our second Missing Maura Murray episode in a row. We're going to be doing some more Maura Murray episodes coming up, no doubt about it. We do have an episode this week coming to you on the Unsolved Murder of Dean Webster that's going to run on this channel. And then we also have next week a really interesting interview with Daphne from Going West, who's got a missing person case in her family, actually, her aunt or aunt. So that's coming up in a couple weeks. But then we're going to get back to more Murray stuff, because I think we're at a point where things kind of feel like information is coming out, doesn't it, Lance? Doesn't it feel like things are coming out right now?
Well, to me, it feels like things are bubbling. Things are simmering. The pot is simmering. It's like you're looking at it, and it's just a couple more minutes before you get that full rolling boil going. And that's what it feels like to me. And there's always these like moments in between, these little lulls, these ebbs and flows. But right now, you know, we're at that like, which way is it going to go? Is it going to boil over, or is it going to simmer down a little bit? I think it's our responsibility to make sure that it maintains that rolling boil, because we're not trying to antagonize or solicit salacious material. There's information out there that is being distributed, and there's information that's being intentionally bent and intentionally manipulated. So we want to make sure that we just stay the course the best we can.
Yeah. And great emails. Keep them coming. And we can accept safe emails. We can keep your identity safe. So feel free to send us emails at the Missing Maura Murray at Gmail account or our personal email addresses. That's fine. And we wanted to address one quick thing about we actually took down a couple of episodes. And they were episodes 96 and 103, and they both included Scott Wahl. And the reason we took them down was not because of the information in there or anything like that. It was really because of some, embarrassing Twitter outbursts, I guess you could say, where he kind of sort of said that he never liked us, and he was just kind of using us to get promotion for Maura and give us content and things like that. And I don't know. It just, it felt so disingenuous, Lance, that I just think we need to distance ourselves from this person.
Yeah, it's necessary, because it wasn't just sort of him saying it. It was him showing evidence of stating specifically that he did not like us, you and I. He did not like the true crime thing. He didn't like the true crime community. He only went to CrimeCon to be there with Julie as a supportive figure. And that was just one of the instances where intentional deception was shown to us by this party. And by keeping the episode out there that he was in, feels a little bit wrong, because we don't know what he said in that episode to deceive. I mean, if you're being deceptive, and then you're putting out information, and you do an interview, and then you contradict yourself, and you show that you've been deceptive, I don't know, we got to go back to the drawing board on that episode and find out, okay, well, what else, if anything, he was deceptive on. So,
right. It's not like a personal thing, like we're upset that he doesn't like us. We really don't care about that. But he acted like he did like us. That's the problem. And so we will actually put transcripts of these episodes out. I'm thinking of starting a new Reddit account, Lance, and because I have been monitoring Reddit a little bit lately. And so I feel like I'm going to start a Reddit page and maybe just put these transcripts out there. And maybe just enter that social media world a little bit, because there is value in it. And there's a lot of talk out there, which is great. We want to keep the talk going about Maura Murray and what happened to her. And if you have any information, there are email addresses, there are phone numbers you can reach, there are in the show notes. You can call or email the New Hampshire State Police. You can email the Murray family. You can email us. And also, regarding the episode that we're about to play, keep in mind there was a chat room going. Julie Murray was in the chat room, and there were other people in the chat room. So sometimes we will reference the chat room and things like that. And I did see, speaking of Reddit, I did see that we were kind of accused of ignoring comments. We did not ignore comments intentionally on Thursday. There were so many comments, it was hard to keep up. And regarding So there is one instance that comes up here in this episode, and it is about these three men that Maura, Kate, and Sarah hung out with on the Saturday before Maura went missing. Was this known or not is a big question. I know some people are saying, oh, well, Fred knew that was Sarah's cousin. But I'm just so confused if that's Sarah's cousin and we knew that, or Fred knew that, then why is Fred saying and Julie saying that we don't know the identities of these men? So I'm again, still confused about this.
Me too. I don't know who they are. I don't know why information would be kept. I know that it's also not our privilege to have all the information that's out there. So if there's information as to their identities and who knew who they were before someone else knew who they were, I guess is sort of irrelevant at this point. I just don't know why. I mean, I don't know. I'm really confused why this is news right now. Maybe it's the way that the information came about, and maybe that's indicative of information that came up that is out there that people know about that haven't said anything yet. I don't know. I'm just very confused. Do they have something to do with why she was leaving, why she was going up north? I don't know.
I don't know either, but we get into it a little bit here in this episode, and then we'll keep breaking it down again. I mean, I know that a lot of people are out there listening to this show. They want to hear more conversation, and so we are going to bring some. So please send us your ideas, your thoughts at missingmauramurray@gmail.com.
And before we get to this episode, Tim, you had mentioned that we are going to be talking more about Maura Murray and the disappearance, but we also still will be continuing our work with private investigations for the missing and featuring cases that come to us by way of them, including the Dean Webster case, which will be coming up soon, part two with his sister Sandy. So just hang with all of the episodes, because the information, no matter if it's about Maura or about a missing person or a cold case that PIs for the Missing is working on, it's all important stuff to hear.
And Lance, on this date, 24 years ago, on July 16th, 1986, Octavia Ann Goolsbee went missing from Greensboro, North Carolina.
At the time she disappeared, Octavia was 5 foot 2 inches, 140 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes. She has a scar on her forehead and a tattoo on her arm that read Eddie and ELR. Octavia was the mother of several young children. There's very little information about Octavia's story, so anyone with information should contact the Greensboro Police Department at 336-254-0462. Yeah, this is the best place to interact. So I don't know when we're going to open up these other two squares here, but probably we'll talk for a little bit and then we'll open up the squares.
Yeah, we'll talk for a little bit and then we'll open up the squares. Prosecutor's Podcast is here, I know. I'm not sure who else is here in the chat room. It's large tonight, so thank you very much for tuning in. Yeah, we don't have all the answers. Just want to start by saying that. We surely don't. But we have been working on the Maura Murray case with the podcast Missing Maura Murray for almost 5 years now. Actually, it's almost exactly 5 years, Lance. And so Maura Murray went missing on February 9th, 2004 in North Haverhill, New Hampshire. Right about 7:27, her car spun out. She was driving a 1996 Black Saturn on Route 112. And this isn't exactly the most rural route, Lance. I think when people start talking about this story, they immediately say, oh, White Mountains, so rural. And it's not, I mean, it is to city folk, but it's not the most rural area in that area. And you know, there were houses there. There were witnesses who saw her car spin out.
Exactly. Sorry, I was just thanking. Sarah Turney just popped in with 1,000 V-coins.
What?
Yeah. I think that translates to $1 million. So thank you.
That's amazing. Thank you, Sarah.
But,
wow.
Yeah, so a little bit of detail on that. It's not the most I'm sure everyone here knows the details, but that road, Route 112, is the cut between or the go-between between the two highways there. And if you were cutting through the mountains, that's where you're going if you were to reach a destination that cuts through the mountains, the Kangamangas Highway and the White Mountains National Reserve. I can't is there. But it's a pretty if you are vacationing up in that area and you are heading from point A to Stowe or Bretton Woods or something like that, then you would be going through there. So it is traveled by tourists on occasion, and February probably was a pretty big tourist season for skiing.
Right. Yeah, usually is in that area. It's obviously a big ski area, being up there in the mountains. So yeah, it's a weird thing that she went missing on that road, because it's sort of a locally traveled road. I mean, if you're not a local, the only reason you're there is if you're vacationing, you'd say, right?
I'd say so. Yeah, I don't think you'd probably find yourself there just perchance. But I don't think we've said a shout out to Julie Murray, who is in, if this is the Julie Murray, she is in the chat room now, and I'm assuming that it is Maura Murray's sister. Julie, hello. And yeah, if you want to hop on, we will open this up momentarily after we get through, you know, some details.
I don't have too many more details to go over, because that is kind of, I mean, a lot of the story starts before that, and then after that, you're talking investigation, and I don't know what...
I mean, you want to open up the windows?
Let's open it up. Yeah.
All right. And people are watching out there on Twitter. If you're watching on Twitter, that's awesome. But click the link to join here, because this is where you can interact. It's kind of tough for Tim and I to look at the Twitter notifications and respond to you there or on Facebook. So if you want to actually interact, it's easier for us here in this chat room.
Hey, it is Brett from the Prosecutors
Brett.
Podcast. How's it going?
Hey, guys. It's going great.
You?
How are y'all?
Doing great.
Hey, I'm doing well. Doing well. Thank you guys for inviting us on.
Yeah, of
hey,
course.
Anytime. You are exactly how I pictured you to look.
is that a compliment? I don't know.
You said you didn't want to do video, so I don't know what I was picturing.
Well, I told these guys that, you know, Alice is beautiful, but I have a face for radio, so but whatever, it's fine. Happy to be here. Yeah, you know, Alice is actually working on a case tonight, so she couldn't be here, but
wait,
I thought
that,
I would
is
join.
Is that Alice in the room here? Is that Alice over
no,
there?
No, Alice is not here.
Oh, okay,
Alice
okay.
Alice is not here.
That's another Alice. Okay.
Another Alice. So, but she sends her regards and her regrets. So.
Well, you guys did a great job covering the case recently. Sorry, Lance, I step on your joke.
Yeah, I gotta slow. I've muted myself.
Well,
Brett,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, tell us a little bit about your coverage of Maura Murray and what that experience was like.
Yeah, you know, it was a case we definitely wanted to do. I've been listening to you guys since, I guess, you got started. You know, read James Renner's book on Maura Murray, and I don't think you can do a true crime podcast without doing Maura Murray, and we thought we could bring a perspective that maybe other people didn't have with our experience sort of in the prosecuting world. So it was something we wanted to do. We wanted to stick to the facts. We wanted to avoid the drama. We learned very quickly it's impossible to avoid the drama. But, you know, I hope it was helpful for people. I hope people enjoyed it. I hope it didn't screw too many things up.
Yeah, I don't think it screwed anything up. I thought I found it entertaining and informative.
Yeah, and, you know, I just want to say one thing about this latest bit of information. Like you said, there's so many questions. We don't really know a whole lot about it right now. I would love to hear from James more. But I think... I'm glad people are learning new information, and I want new information to come out, but it doesn't seem like this is new information. It seems like this is information that a lot of people, maybe not a lot of people, but some people have known for a very long time. And compartmentalized information in an investigation like this is bad. You know, all this information needs to be out there. If there's more information that people know that they're sort of keeping to themselves for some reason, they need to get that out there, because I really believe in the wisdom of the crowd, and unless we have that, and unless all these folks here in the chat room can think about this and look at this, I don't think we're going to get anywhere in this case. And we talk about FOIA, and we talked about FOIA and why that's so important and why the family wants access to the information. It's for this very reason. But we shouldn't be hiding information from each other.
And I don't know if you previously said this, but you have the Prosecutor's Podcast, and it's not just arbitrarily called the Prosecutor's Podcast. You and Alice are actual prosecutors. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Can you give a quick background for yourself so people, because you might start throwing out some legal terms and things that are going to fly over my head. So I just want people to know that you don't have like a thesaurus right there in front of you.
Yeah. And if we do that, or if I do that, let me know. I'll explain anything.
Because then I'll be stopping you every single sentence.
So Alice and I, we've known each other for a while. We've worked actually in several different jobs together. Most recently as prosecutors, we actually share a wall in our office. Both went to law school a long time ago, done a lot of different things, seen the law from a lot of different angles, and thought we could bring all that to bear on these cases because I listen to a lot of true crime. And people, you know, sometimes you listen to a podcast and the podcast host will ask a question. I'm thinking, I know the answer to that question. You know, I wish I could let them know or whatnot. And so Alice and I just, we talked about this stuff all the time. And finally we said, hey, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Let's just start a podcast. And that's basically how this got started. This was a consequence of COVID. So
yeah. Well, glad you're here on the scene. I think you're adding something already to the mix. Yeah. And like Lance said, I think you guys come with a professional background that obviously we can't match. We're just a bunch of jabronis.
I mean, for real.
Whatever.
I could give you some insight on how to properly structure a comedy murder mystery dinner theater, but probably not very useful in your world.
Court of law.
Yeah.
Well, in a court of law, right. You know, wish we knew half the stuff you guys know about this case. I think the podcast would have been even better if we had.
Well, when we spoke, I think it was last week, one of the first things that I wanted to tell you was it was so refreshing to hear that point of view, to hear that point of view that you and Alice put out there in such a well-spoken, structured, articulate way, because sometimes I'm not very articulate, and sometimes I hear other shows talk about other cases and they're not very articulate with the information that they're delivering, but especially hearing information about this case that Tim and I have been so entrenched in and pretty much have made it our lives. It was really cool to hear somebody talk about it in such deliberate, articulate detail.
Well, yeah, and we have that perspective. But, you know, I would just say our perspective might be different, but I think everybody's perspective is valuable. If that makes sense. I feel like everybody comes at this case from a different place, and that perspective adds, I mean, just looking at evidence in a different way. You know, I mean, we talked about that the emblem on the Saturn, and that may be completely irrelevant, but it wasn't like we came up with that because we were prosecutors. It was just different eyes looking at it. And my wife happened to drive a Saturn, right? So I think that's why the more people we can get involved and the more people who are learning about this case and the more welcoming the community, the more likely we are to actually reach some sort of conclusion.
Yeah, and I thought that was an interesting theory you guys came up with that at the end of, I think the fourth episode. You guys thought it could be likely about Maura and Patrit Vasi, which is a young man who was struck by a car right around the time when Maura went missing. I think it was that Thursday night before she went missing. And so he was actually in a coma, and he, I believe, has lifelong injuries because of this. Tragic accident. There were a lot of hit and runs.
I don't even think he remembers that night.
Yeah. I believe that is what was said about that.
Right. Good point. There, that area, UMass, especially that time, was just scattered with hit and runs. That was a very, very bad area. There was a lot of students who got hit. Not all of them were that serious, but Patrit Vasi was hit, and he did go into a coma with head damage. And then when he came out, I think he remembered just a little bit, but he doesn't talk about it because he just doesn't remember the rest of it. And it did happen, correct me if I'm wrong, it did happen the same night that Maura received the call that made her break down at her job, as the checkpoint there at the dormitory where she was walked back to her dorm by, Karen Mayotte. And there have been, you know, the theories go back and forth about like what that phone call was that she had. She broke down. Was it because of her sister? Was it because of this or that? And we've looked at the phone records, and according to the phone records, it most likely was not because of Patrice Bassey, because she wouldn't. He was hit after she was. Well, that's the other thing. There are two different accounts there, so that's why you can't just look at this. And what makes the most sense, though, is that Mora was walked back to her dorm before Patrice Vassey was hit, because he was hit after he left a bar and he was walking home, and he probably left the bar after 10:30. And Karen Mayotte's account, her original account, was that Mora received the call in the 10:30 hour, if I'm correct. I'm literally doing this from memory, so I could be wrong.
Now, she said that on your show, but didn't she eventually retract that information and say that it was much later? She did receive the call from her sister around 10:30. There's no question about that.
Right.
Yeah.
And on your show, she said that she walked into that dorm around 10:30. But my understanding is later on, she thought about that again and realized that her time was off because she was thinking that the dorm schedule for the weekday, not the weekend, and Thursday was actually the weekend schedule. And so Mara would have been there much later. And so it was closer to 1:30 that you walked in and found her. Now, you guys know a lot more about this than I do, so I may even be wrong about that.
No.
You're right, though. I mean, if she was found at 10:30, then yeah, she didn't hit Patrice Bassey.
And you're right that there are kind of two timelines regarding that, and I'm not really sure which one is accurate.
And look, I want to, just to correct one other thing you said, I don't think it's likely that she hit Patrice Vassey. I think it's possible, yeah. And I think people for a long time had sort of discounted it as impossible, and I don't think that's the case.
And for anybody who's joining, we decided that the V-Coins, if you have a V-Coin balance and you want to give some V-Coins, we decided that everything that is donated, everything that's given here is going to be donated to Julie's GoFundMe for the search for her sister, Mora. Throw those V-Coins into the hat.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
You're on mute, Tim.
How's it going? How are you?
What's up?
You guys, I just want to say you guys have been doing a great job ever since the beginning. I really think you guys, your heart's in the right place. I just want to know, where's Bill? I thought he was going to be here tonight.
Thanks a lot. I don't know. I do not know. I did not hear from him that he was going to be here. He might be here or watching on one of those.
Yeah, I saw him post it on one of the things, you know, a lot of talk, no walk.
Yeah, I would like to ask him about the voicemail a little bit. I mean, I really am confused about this entire thing. So, you know, who knew when and what those questions are. I don't even know, to be honest. So we need some help breaking this down.
Yeah. And he can answer a lot of those questions really quickly, you know?
Yeah, the issue, I think, is we're not sure exactly how far any legal situation goes, and maybe he should not be talking. Maybe his lawyer is telling him you probably shouldn't go on and say things. I you know what I'm saying? I have no idea.
Right, I understand. But he's doing a lot of talking about everything, really, you know? So it's just kind of...
That's true.
He's ranting about everything else. He might as well rant about something that has some substance. It could, you know, address a lot of the questions people have.
That's a fair point. No, I think he could come out and talk about this for sure, because I don't know if he was waiting for us to do it. I think it was kind of put out there like we had information regarding this. That is not the case. We do not. We were going to have Renner on, who really wrote about this originally. So yeah, it's not our story.
You know, you guys have never tried to fabricate or sensationalize anything as far as I've seen.
Thank you.
The way the timeline sort of worked with Bill was that we always put out there from the beginning that he had an open door policy to come on the show and to talk about anything. And we literally said to him, James Renner is saying some pretty inflammatory things about you. Feel free to come on the show to talk about those things and perhaps, you know, shed some light on that. And some time went by. We received an email. We had a phone call, a couple phone calls. More time went by. And just recently, in the past few months, we had a few Zoom calls with him to gain trust. He wanted to gain our trust. And we said, that's fine. And we had a few Zoom calls. But our notes on the Zoom calls, we started looking at some things that he said before. And I mean, things weren't lining up. And we wanted to really ask him more detailed questions about these things that weren't lining up. And it really could just be someone misspoke somewhere along the lines. But Tim and I are trying to do the right thing with this show. And also, there is a trial coming up for him. That's not fabricated. There is a trial coming up, and it's kind of tough for Tim and I to have him on because the it was presented to us, hey, we should all do it. Prosecutors Podcast 107, Missing More Murray, we should all do one together. Bill Rausch is there and we should all get along. But we were like, this guy's on trial. Like, it's really hard for us to turn a blind eye to that. Like, I can't do it. Tim can't do it. And so that's where that moral, you know, conundrum was. And then it all fucking blew up.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing we want to do is take shots at people on Twitter or on the podcast. You know, I hope people understand that. That is the last thing that we have any interest in doing. And we were pushed past the breaking point on Twitter and with the podcast. And I'm sorry that it happened, but that is what happened. To your point, yeah, Bill was talking a lot, and he was really calling out Maggie, and he was calling us out that night. And so, yeah, I don't feel great about that Twitter blow up, you know. But everything we said in the episode today is true. And again, I don't feel good about that. I'm not here to attack somebody. That is not what we're here to do. But yes, you're right. We need answers, and he could answer these things. He could.
And you just mentioned Maggie, Tim. There was also some talk about how Maggie might have received some information or something. I'm trying to, like, get my head wrapped around it. That she had some information, maybe the transcript from the Oxygen TV show that was supposed to be kept confidential. That was never given to us. There's never been anything like that. We knew she had something like that, but she literally said to us at one point, like, if I pass this to anybody else, if anyone's eyes see this, my career is ruined. And so we never asked for it. To my knowledge, James Renner never asked for it. So... I know she just put a statement on Reddit about maybe she told some people some notes that she took about it, but we've never received anything in detail, any you know, official document.
Nothing. It has nothing to do with us. And as far as, yeah,
like look at what a TV series is made from. Like, how many people are a part of that? There's dozens of people who have access to that, and to just think that it's like this little shout out to Dr. Shiloh and Dr. Scott, to think that there's some dark triad that is operating behind the scenes that was part of the Oxygen show is kind of comical. All right, I'm muting myself again. I'm going on too far.
All right, well, do you want to go through these points as they happened? Chronologically,
hold on,
I guess.
Hold on. Yeah. Armchair Detective is in the chat room. We're not talking about David Aldridge, for God's sake.
Relax,
dude. Email us separately again.
Yeah, we might as well take the time to respond to him here. That stuff has been out for a long time. He has emailed a few times about that, but that's been out there.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. Okay, so I guess Renner's blog post is what started this, right? Is what started the sort of confusion regarding this voicemail. And when I say confusion, like, I'm genuinely confused with this. I'm not exaggerating.
So no one knows exactly what was on the voicemail, right? There's been no confirmation of what was actually said.
Yeah, I've not heard anything.
Okay, are we talking about the voicemail that was left for Bill when he went through security, the Red Cross voicemail?
No. I'm talking about the voicemails that they listened to when she was missing. Does anybody know what's on those?
Yeah. Okay. No, not that I know of. Absolutely not. I don't know. So just looking at Renner's blog here. So And Maggie is, I believe Maggie is available to hop in here, hop on video. So we may.
All right, I'll jump off, guys. Okay. I just want to let you guys know you're doing a great job.
Okay, thanks a lot. Hey,
thanks a lot. Really appreciate it.
Really appreciate the questions. Thanks a lot. Okay, so let's get Maggie on here. So let's start this with the Renner blog post, and then we'll go through the Murray statement, and then we'll talk about Maggie's response here real quick and try to make sense of what's going on. So Renner says that one thing that came out is that Billy was allegedly able to access Maura Murray's voicemail and listen to a message from Kate Markopoulos to Maura that revealed Maura had cheated on him over the weekend. And here's a quote. There was a message from Kate, and it says the story, according to Bill, with the information from Kate, is that Saturday after they dropped off Fred, they were out together. The girls went out. Kate and Maura had some drinks. Kate is saying they met three new guys who did not go to UMass and were from the area. Apparently, they were all talking then, and at one point, Maura and one of the guys were gone. Bill asked Kate about this because one of Maura's voicemails was from Kate asking what was up with Bill and what happened with the guy the other night. That guy the other night. Okay. I don't even know like where that's from. I'm so confused by everything. But Maggie Freeling's here. What's up, Maggie?
Hi. Hello, I'm here. Hi, Brett. I did not expect you to look like this. Oh no, I literally just got out of the shower. I was not expecting to be on video at all. I was like, maybe I can get rid of video. Hi guys. Hi everyone. So I just figured I'd hop in since I've talked with all of you guys about this. I've always been really open with the transcripts. I know Dave Haas, who's in here, has always asked me about them. And a lot of people, the only thing is Oxygen owns any property. So they own videos. I know people have asked for it. I guess it's NBC or Oxygen. I don't know exactly who owns what. I would assume NBC, blanket company. Yeah, I don't have rights to any of that. I have it. It's my work. I did it. I worked this case for 2 years. I did all of the interviews, so I know what's in the transcripts, but I can't give them to anybody. And, I know Julie has asked for them from Oxygen is where I directed her. Unfortunately, they won't give it to her. They own them. I can't do anything about that. I have always said if anyone wants to ask me a question, I can control F. I can search. I could scroll through, try and remember which interview it was, where it was. What I had said about Renner's post is that, he asked me to find something. I found it, and it was about this Bill call. So that came from transcripts. That was some documents Art and I were looking through. And I just read to him, I said, hey, look, these are Art and I. This is what I found. Art and I were looking through some case files from Maura's friends, Kate and Liz, not... Kate Markopoulos, her friend, Kate and Liz from high school. They were in the documentary. Their interview I did with them made it to the documentary. But they gave us basically just like giant boxes of stuff. And we were sifting through for hours. And this one transcript is Art and I sifting through. And we came across this one document that said the quote that, Renner reported that there was, they wrote the week of, this was the week of, they had taken some notes. They were doing their own investigation as good friends looking for their missing friend. And that was that. And so, however Renner chose to portray it. And then I also want to address the three guys, as I mentioned in my post. When we came across that, of course, we looked into that. That would have been amazing to have a new lead in the case. Like I said, the documentary would have been much better, less psychics, more investigating. But as soon as we went to the New Hampshire State Police and said, hey, look, we just found out there are these guys at the party. Maura was off with one of them. Did you look into this? Did you know about this? It seems Kate Markopoulos did know about this. They said, yes, they found the guys. They knew who it was. The one guy Maura was with was from Boston. Alibi. We were like, okay, cool. We're going to not really dive into that. It seems like the police don't really think anything of that. And I called Art today and confirmed, yes, my memory is correct. That is what happened. And he's currently looking for the original document from Liz and Kate. That is their case file, which is exactly what they called it. That I can, we can look at and see, did it have a time? When did Bill check, the voicemail? If he did check the voicemail, this is just what we read on their documents.
Okay.
Okay. I'd love to say that made things clearer in my head. It made things clearer on how you had the information, but I mean,
can I ask a question?
Oh, please.
Yeah.
It seems like while we may not have known about this, that the Murrays did. Is that accurate? Like they have heard this voicemail.
I don't know that Julie's here. I mean, I think she could say that. I do know that Fred knew Maura was with this guy. That I do know, because I know that we had specifically asked him, what did Kate tell you about that night?
And I guess,
and so I know Kate had like a private conversation with him, and I'm assuming naturally Fred would never want to say, you know, Maura was with some guy. I understand he's, you know, protecting his daughter. So it does seem like Fred did know about this.
So I guess from their statement, Bill's mom listened to the voicemail.
It seems like that's what the Murrays are saying. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know who listened to what voicemail.
See, this goes back to what I was saying earlier. I know all the dramas about who let who see transcripts and what did Maggie control F and who was doing what. But for me, if there are things that Fred or whoever is keeping from the community because he doesn't want his daughter to look bad, and I totally get that. I totally get that. I mean, I'm a dad. I would want to protect my daughter too. But if the most important thing is finding Maura, I just don't think you can do that. I think, you know, you can't decide. Fred can't decide what's important. You know, he can't look at this objectively. And I think in the balance between protecting Maura and finding out what happened to Maura, finding out what happened to Maura has to win. So I just wonder, and the thing that this made me wonder was, is there more stuff that the family or Bill or Bill's mom or somebody knows that we don't know, that if we did know, some of these smart people who follow this case religiously might be able to figure something out about?
Well, I will say there is a lot of stuff we came across that, to not upset anybody, we didn't publish. We tried to keep it pretty PG.
Well, I mean, not to interrupt, but I'm sure that happens for every single production that's done on every missing person or every cold case, because, I mean, no one's a friggin' saint, right? I mean, there's going to be something that comes up.
Of course. And that's the thing. We can't, you know, we decided, you know, in this particular documentary, like I said, you know, we were really just trying. This was the first chance to get an actual national audience on this in the form of a true crime documentary, 6-part series. It hadn't been done yet. We wanted people to come in this case, and we know it brought people into this case for sure. A lot of people to the case. And that's what we were trying to do. We didn't go into it thinking we were going to solve it. I don't think we thought that. I mean, at some point, maybe we got a little naive and thought maybe we would do that. So we did decide, you know, what information is going to be in it. You know, does her, when the police tell us this guy has nothing to do with it, does it make sense to add in, oh, she was cheating on Bill? If she did, it's unclear whether she actually did be with this guy or not. We just know she went off with a guy. Is that worth it to put in a national documentary, go down that rabbit hole when the police said this guy has nothing to do with it? I wasn't my decision. The producers made that decision, you know, so.
I mean, I guess if the police said that these guys have nothing to do with it, right?
Yeah, I called Art this morning and checked with him again. He said, yeah, we tracked that down. I do remember the guy was from Boston. I know that because we kept trying to think, you know, maybe they were from New Hampshire. I remember we did look into these guys, and the police were like, don't waste your resources.
And Julie Murray just said in the chat there, to clear up, my father did not and still does not know who the three men in question are. He's never spoken to any of the three men. Armchair, if you keep acting up, I swear to God.
Okay, so yeah, that's really compelling then. Fred and the Murrays do not know who these men are, I guess.
I don't know if anyone knows who they are, but I know Kate told Fred that she was with a guy. So I don't know if Kate or Maura even knew. I think I went to UMass. We all just go off with random people. It doesn't mean you know the person. I think they were visiting, clearly. The guy, I think he was visiting from Boston. So I think that's what it was. They were just visiting. Yeah.
Is one of these people the cousin, or is that a completely different set of people?
Yeah, I don't remember. I think that could, this could have been the cousin. It was a dorm party. It's crazy. You know, I looked into this all 3-4 years ago now at this point. So I just know what I was reading in the transcripts. I was asked to control F, look for something. I read verbatim. So that's why I said, I know what Renner wrote is factual. I remember reading these documents. What they mean, I don't know.
And Julie Murray just said, the attorney general Strelzin stated, no one has been cleared, myself included. That's true. I mean, we don't even have, this is still it's still a missing person.
Yeah, that's a great point. So then the identity of these guys, I guess we're trying to find the identity of these guys. Is that what we're saying then?
I would not, I don't, personally, I'm not going to attempt that. I know that the police did believe that they had alibis. So I am not going to do that. If someone else would like to find them, I think you'd have to talk to Kate Markopoulos.
Yeah. So,
if she even knows who they are.
So does that mean Kate was holding back at one point, or am I going a little too far with this already?
No, I've always thought Kate told the police everything. And I think that's how they found these guys.
Okay.
And I think the guy is in Boston the day she just, you know, like, I don't think, I don't know. I'm not going to look for them.
Julie just asked you, Maggie, if you know their names, can you give me that info like you gave Renner the info you provided him?
I absolutely do not know their names. And I said that in my statement today. The police never gave that to us. I don't think we even asked for them. Our Art was the one in communication. And when I called Art today, we don't know who they are. 100% do not know who they are.
And
Kate would, if you have a line to Kate, she would know who they are. If she knew who they are. I don't know how the police found them. So Kate might have known.
And that's exactly the kind of information the police would never share with anybody.
Of course. That's what I mean. They never gave it to us. I don't know if Art even asked for it.
That is a great question, Armchair. Why are we talking about this? How is it tied to her disappearance? Well, we have to look into everything, and there's information out there, and sometimes information comes up. After you've been looking into something for so long and you get new information that's confusing, you want to sort of suss it out and come up with the, you know, just get spitball ideas, workshop ideas, figure out, like, is this important? That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And look, and this is complete.
Yeah, I know. And it, yeah. I was just going to say that's what Art and I did going through these documents, and then we followed it up, and Art and I didn't think there was much to it other than, you know, a bunch of college kids getting drunk, going off with a guy, and I thought maybe she was upset by it. I always thought maybe this man assaulted her is what I always thought. Maybe that could have been something that happened. Maybe, you know, she just went to talk and something happened, and that's what could have upset her so much. Was always a question that I thought maybe happened.
Jake actually has a good question. Why can't Kate and Sarah give those names to Julie?
That's what I just said. I just wanted to Julie's response. I said, I assume Kate and Sarah would know. And yeah, Art's looking for these documents. I don't know if we even have them. And he believes these are shareable because the documents given to us by friends and family were not property of Oxygen. So if we do get this case file, as Kate and Liz called it. Julie, I'm happy to share with you if you want to email, text.
Yeah, I think it's kind of strange that we haven't heard from those guys, right? I guess, but you know, you're probably going to stay the hell out of it if you could potentially be implicated in a way like that, even if you have been cleared. But now again, I'm confused. If Art and I guess they're saying the police, Strelzin, are saying it's cleared, but I that sounds conflicting to me.
No one can clear anybody until she's found. The police don't put stock in them is like the correct terminology. You know, these guys had alibis. One of them's in fucking Boston the day she goes missing. The one she was with is what I know.
Oh, okay.
And can I just say, if they're three random guys, they're three random guys. If one of them's Kate's cousin, all she has to do is pick up the phone and call her cousin and say, hey, who are those two guys you hung out with?
I forget where the cousin thing came from. That I don't remember. But
And just on why this might be important, she would not be the first person to meet somebody on a weekend, kind of fall head over heels with them and say, hey, let's have a rendezvous, you know, in the White Mountains. You know, I mean,
sure.
That's complete speculation, but this could be important. We just don't know.
And guest 8080 said, not Kate's cousin, Sarah's cousin.
Okay, well, Ask Sarah. Sarah should know.
Yeah, I believe that is someone referenced that is kind of all over Reddit as a fact. As far as I know, I don't know about that. I know it's on Reddit as a fact, but I don't really know if it's true or not. Okay, so the Murray statement here, they said that the truth is that the week Mora disappeared, Sharon Rausch contacted Sprint to gain access to Mora's voicemail in order to assist law enforcement with our family and our family with the ongoing search. It was because of this effort that our father reached out to Mora's college friend and learned of the existence of the three men Mora was introduced to on the Saturday night. Okay, so Fred apparently learned of their existence and this story, but not their identity. Okay. But who did he hear the story from them? If it's Sarah and her cousin, how would that?
I think Kate, because I remember asking Fred, what did Kate tell you? We all knew Fred talked to Kate. And when I had my 5-hour interview with Fred, it was certainly one of the things I asked him. You know, what did Kate tell you? Well, I was just saying, you know, whenever I told Julie I couldn't give her the transcripts, you know, myself and the producers all said, anything you want to know, we'll tell you. And everyone's known that. I mean, the information in there is my work. I did that. I'm free to share information. I can't share transcripts. So anyone who wants to know something, Renner took advantage of it and said, hey, you know, I want to know something about this.
Right. Okay. So we know that they listened to the voicemails after Mora went missing and accessed that information and passed that along to the police. The police were able to, or at least Fred was able to talk to.
I don't think we know who listened to what when. Right. When you say they listened.
Right.
To
right.
You.
Good point. Yeah. Okay.
Shannon, Murray's statement says that the mom listened to it. Right. I mean, isn't that what it says?
Yeah. Sharon Rausch is Bill's mom.
Which is, I want to know how that comes, because the notes from Kate and Liz say Bill listened to a voicemail from Kate that said, hey, what happened with that guy the other night? So maybe Sharon listened and relayed it to Bill. But Bill heard this voicemail.
I mean,
according to the friend's notes, Bill was aware of this voicemail that said, hey, what happened with that guy the other night?
So I think the best sort of, you know, pro Bill, that's dangerous to even say, way to look at this would be Mara disappears, she listens to it, Bill listens to it, and he just hasn't shared it and doesn't want to share it for the same reason that Fred doesn't want to share it, because he doesn't want to make Mara look bad.
It's fair. I know that's why Fred didn't want to talk about it, and Fred said that, and that's fair. It's your daughter. You're not going to want to put that on national TV. We didn't put it on national TV. We did not put this on national TV.
Okay. But now if we were to find out somehow that he had accessed it before she went missing, that's a bigger story. But obviously we don't know that.
That's definitely a different
story. That's a much different story.
Sarah claiming that she slept through this whole party is the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my entire life. That's the least believable thing in this entire case.
Yeah. I mean, maybe she went off with someone too, you know, and just wasn't there for anything. Who knows? I don't know. But, you know, yeah, it is weird, you know, that, I mean, we've been talking about this party or whatever for years now.
And Sarah's a weird character. She always falls off the radar. Everyone talks about Kate. What about Sarah?
Right.
Okay.
And I forget it. I forget, Julie, if you've tried to reach out to them, but it's just so strange that these people will not speak to you.
Is that what the situation is? That they won't speak to Julie?
I don't think they have. I don't think they've spoken to Julie.
Julie says Bill's mom was the account holder, so she had to request access before they listened to the voicemail with law enforcement. And we know Bill has told us that they printed out their phone records via the same way and provided them to the police while the police were waiting for the subpoena.
So one thing I remember from way back in the day and cell phones before some of the people on this chat were even alive, is you could, in addition to listening to the voicemails on your phone, there was a number you could call. It was like *86 or something. You dial *86 and it asked for your account number, and your account number was your phone number. And you type in your phone number and then it would ask for your password and you could listen to your voicemails. So while I'm sure it's true that his mother had to go to Sprint to listen to these voicemails, I don't think that necessarily means that Bill would not have been able to access it if he knew Mara's password. Who knows if he knew that?
Right. And then how would we know if it was a new voicemail or not, or had been listened to? Right. I feel like there might be no way for us to know that at this point, you know?
Now, right. I'll say this. The fact that he was on the phone with Kate the next day is always struck me as strange. I said it was strange when we talked about the podcast. I mean, maybe I'm weird, but I've...
Well, that's why I personally believe. I think he heard this voicemail and called Kate and was like, what the fuck is this about? And that's how the notes made it seem. That he was aware of this and called Kate and said, what guy was she off with, potentially? And only Bill can answer this. He's always said he never knew Maura cheated on him. So we don't know.
Yeah, you guys brought up a really interesting point, Brett, in one of your episodes where you were going through some phone records and, or actually, no, I'm sorry. I think you were going through Maura's actions before she left for the White Mountains. And she had, actually, her and Bill spoke on the phone after the accident with the Toyota. And that was a couple of calls, I think a 15 minute and then a 5 or something. And then, so that was the last time that Bill and Maura spoke. Bill had tried to reach Maura a few times. They hadn't connected in, I want to say, a day and a half or something like that. And then she called him back, and he was apparently on the other line with Kate Markopoulos and didn't click over.
And then he immediately called her back, I think 4 times in a row. I may be wrong about the exact number. And she didn't answer. She just sent the email, the text message, or whatever. Or I guess the whole, like, love you, stud. Maybe that was an email. I don't know. That whole interaction to me was weird.
Yeah, I'll have to look at the records again. I am not really quite sure about it, but yeah, that seemed like that could be an interesting moment, because it does seem like that she made a decision at some point during those minutes, right? She was searching for where to go, and then all of a sudden she was taking money out of the ATM and buying liquor and going. So, and she didn't book anything. We know that. So what happened in that time to make her decide, I'm now going, and not only I'm going, I have a destination to go. So I wonder if someone knocked on her dorm door or called her dorm phone, and we don't know about that.
The other thing I always found interesting, and I talked about this in my interview with Erin Murphy, her friend that she dropped off her clothes to. When I talked to Erin, I also don't remember if this was in the documentary, but she would have been the last person to see Maura if she had answered the door. And Erin always felt really kind of distraught about that. Maura knocked on the door, and then Erin didn't get up from her bed. And when she went, the clothes were out there. So it's just interesting to think also of her mindset. It wasn't like she wasn't trying to see somebody either. She knocked on Erin's door and possibly would have had a conversation with her, possibly would have stopped and talked to her, you know? So I really always thought that little bit of information that Erin told me was really interesting.
And Maggie, I think you may have been the one who told me this. I don't remember. When Erin talked to Maura on the phone before that, we said, and I think this is true, that Maura was upset even at the time and was sort of crying. And Erin asked her if everything was okay. And she said, no. And she asked, what's wrong? And she said, you're my sister. Again, the same sort of thing that she had said earlier, which I always thought was interesting as well.
Yeah, I do believe Erin said that. I don't know what I don't know what my sister really was about. I think we've all been kind of re-questioning whether, you know, what Kathleen told me would have really set her off that much. I know, Brett, you and I talked about that. So I think that's still quite interesting.
Julie Murray here in the chat room says, my dad was not informed about these men further than what he has said, and he wants to talk to them still to this day.
Did the police inform him, or was it just from her friends? I'm curious if the police mentioned it to you guys at all.
Okay, well, we only really have a few minutes left anyway, but this has been a good conversation. I really appreciate everyone joining us here today. We're trying to unpack this, make sense of the latest news in the case. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's really hard to say what's news sometimes and what isn't. What, you know, you really have to kind of hone in on what the important details of these new blog posts, these new podcasts, all these things are, you know. It's hard sometimes. You need to talk about it.
Yeah. I think this whole question of is this new information or is it not, it seems like people knew, and it seems like, you know, it's information that the community can now dig into. Julie wants to know who these guys are. I think there's resources out there to potentially find out.
Yeah. I mean, look, we could keep someone's we could certainly keep their identity private. You know, if anyone's out there, I mean, how could you not be interested in the case if you're one of those guys, right? Like, you're unaware of the documentary and everything. Like, I don't know.
I don't think we know that. Here's the thing, though. It's like Brett was saying, and like, you know, working closely with law enforcement in, you know, my career, your career, they know the identities, I'm sure, and they're not gonna release that. I mean, these guys might have nothing to do with it, and to put their names out there is, it could potentially ruin their lives.
Should we start
lives.
Guessing names?
You know,
start wildly guessing names.
Who knows? Could be right. We just go through the alphabet. No, I mean, if someone, you know, knows anybody, like, or wants to contact us who was a part of this, you know, obviously we would not put your name out there. If you want to talk to the Murrays, you know, that would be great. Because that would be additional information that, you know, it's strange to me that we haven't heard about that in whatever 15, 16 years and haven't heard like from those people or that ever actually happened until now.
Yeah.
They might not even know, you know, like, you know, I watch so much true crime stuff. It's like, actually, I was working on a case the other day where, you know, this guy is in prison. He's wrongfully convicted and his alibi witness had no idea until 10 years later. She writes to the wife and goes, oh, actually, I saw him that night. You know, they might not even know.
Yeah, I mean, we're just in the middle of it all, right? So we just think that this is the world and this is what everybody knows. And, you know, there's somebody out there in like North Dakota or something who's like, what, this is going on now? Oh yeah, I remember that.
Actually, that's so funny. Someone made a point, if the cops talked to them, they would know. That's a good point. Or they might not know she's still missing. Right. They might not know she's still missing.
Right. But I'm
really glad that this all happened tonight. Julie Murray just posted the website, MoraMurrayMissing.org, and that direct email to her. So yeah, you can reach out on that website, and this has been really amazing because all of these people are coming together. They all support you, Julie, and your family, and hopefully this is the foundation that is needed to. Most of these people want answers, and a lot of the, I'm sorry, everybody in here wants answers. And I think most of them have the right way to go about doing it. Sometimes people don't go the right way. Sometimes people don't go about it the right way. But their heart's in the right place is what I'm saying. Thanks, Armchair. You know, I'm warming up to you now. Thank you.
Oh, everybody. Yeah.
Wow. Look at everyone coming.
Hour
together.
Has just flown by. Is there anything else anyone wants to hit on before we wrap up here for the, wow. Thank you, Elise. The crime truck. Yeah. Wow. Thank you. The V coins are just flying.
They're flowing in.
Richard asked, honestly, Richard, I really found the friends information the most interesting. And that was this information that was shared by Renner. These girls, you know, at the time, college girls did so much work looking for their friend. And this information is fresh from back then. I mean, there was something in the transcripts about Kate and Liz talking about Bill looking for engagement rings. I mean, I hadn't really known much about that. So, you know, there's a lot in their information. And, you know, so that's what I think is in the transcripts.
Is there a second most interesting thing that you can think of off the top of your head? Really putting you on the spot here with this one.
No. No, okay. Not really.
All right. Well, yeah. We should revisit that, though.
Yeah, Shannon's saying Amanda is begging for the GoFundMe link. We keep saying this GoFundMe. I'm so sorry because I've been talking and stuff. I haven't been able to put the GoFundMe link in there. We'll get that up. Everyone hang tight. That GoFundMe link is about to go up.
We answered that about Cecil, though. And again, we didn't put that in the documentary because we didn't want to put his personal life on blast again. He had Alzheimer's. He's very ill, very, very ill.
Right.
So, you know, we knew that when we did the interview, he was gracious enough to do an interview with Alzheimer's. And I think we had to think, you know, this guy might not even know what he's saying. I don't know. He has Alzheimer's. It was definitely a precarious situation. And that's why Strelzin and Chuck, I believe, sat in on it.
Yeah, and the fact that he was turned into something that he shouldn't have been turned into is really upsetting. When that happened, he committed suicide. He shot himself. And it's incredibly tragic and really, really heart-wrenching and infuriating to think that people would put online that he might have killed himself because he knew something about this. The guy was tortured because he didn't know anything about this, because he didn't take it as seriously as he should have taken it. And he wouldn't have known to take it as seriously, because when does that ever happen up there? So he wasn't being an alarmist when he found the car. He was just dealing with the situation that he's probably dealt with a few times in the past. And this one just turned into something that he had no idea was going to turn into, on top of the fact that he's got early onset Alzheimer's that rapidly developed into him shooting himself twice. Like, not a good situation. And anyone who went online or went to the public and said that this could have been a reason, you know, he had something to do with it and they were closing in, That's fucking bad, because nothing happened. Like, no one closed in on him, but people got impulsive and they went online and they said, this is it, because they wanted their thing to be right.
Yeah, I think the good point is Armchair says he killed himself a few hours after asking to be on my podcast. Imagine being the first person on the scene, and for 15, 16 years, people are continually asking you about something you don't know, and now you have Alzheimer's and you want to just fucking die in peace and you don't know anything about it.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
Absolute nightmare. You know, if he had just not been on duty that night, he wouldn't have had to deal with all this crap for the rest of his life, but he did.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's really, really
bad. I just don't think an officer, like, who's you know, taking an oath turns into a cold-blooded killer all of a sudden, like, while they're on duty. You know what
one
I mean?
Time.
Like, I know
just one time.
I know, like, Joseph DeAngelo was a cop, and he obviously ended up being the Golden State Killer. So there's something about that personality type that could be, I don't know, potentially prone to that kind of career. But I just think that's so far-fetched to assume.
And Dr. Shiloh says GSK was a cop for a hot second, which is exactly true. I mean, Cecil, that was in his blood. Like, he did that. He rose the ranks. And
right. He was not.
GSK was a serial killer, too. It wasn't a one-off thing for him.
Right.
Cecil Smith or Bruce McKay weren't fired for stealing a hammer.
Is Jake and Folkstop the same person? Did you guys research together? Because you have very similar ways of delivering your information. Reach out separately. Let us know. One of the biggest problems in this whole thing is that people hold on to information, and then when Tim and I do our show and we deliver misinformation, then we're attacked for that. Like, we don't know what we're talking about, and that creates a big problem. So if you have information, let us know, and then we can all talk about it.
Someone asked how Renner knew to ask me what was in the transcripts, because everyone's always known I've had the transcripts. This has been a huge deal for years. Yes, I have transcripts of the show that I did and the interviews that I did.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us here tonight on Get Vocal, Maura Murray Night. Wow.
Thanks, guys.
Community coming together. It. Let's do it, guys.
All right, everybody. We can do it. Thank you so much. When a person goes missing, their loved ones often find themselves overcome with worry and grief. Bruce Maitland started the 501c3 nonprofit organization Private Investigations for the Missing because he knows this feeling all too well.
When Bruce's daughter Brianna disappeared in March 2004, he was surrounded by licensed private investigators dedicated to finding her. Now his mission is to provide dedicated private investigators at no cost to other families of the missing, desperate for answers but without the financial means.
Private Investigations for the Missing needs your help. To read the mission statement, make a donation, and keep up with our blog, visit us at investigationsforthemissing.org and follow us at PI for the Missing on Twitter and Facebook and Investigations for the Missing on Instagram.
Because forever is too long to wait.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.